Hi, and welcome back to Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure while raising awareness for mental health. Today, we have a great chat between Emma and a fellow intrepid traveler.
Hey, Darius, that's right. Yeah, I spoke with the wonderful Danielle Colley from Your Good Life about her epic Kilimanjaro trip, where she raised money for Rafiki Mwema.
You also climbed Kilimanjaro, right?
I did all 5,895 metres of it, and we've got it in the show notes today, actually, a video from both of us. So we both made videos after our trips, and I love sharing them. I cry every time, and they're just something really special to look back on. So make sure to watch those as well.
I can't wait to watch it. You guys also talked a little bit about doing charity challenges in general.
Yeah, so like a charity challenge is taking on an adventure or challenge and raising money for charity. And I'm a big fan of travel with a purpose and doing like an epic challenge while raising funds for a good cause. So personally, I've done about 9 now. Not sure Danielle wants to quite rack up the same number, but you'll have to listen to the episode to hear why.
That sounds great. Let's get into it and have fun, everyone.
Enjoy. All right, so here with me today I have Danielle, and I want her to tell us a bit more about herself because she's an amazing speaker, and we have lots of stories to get into, but it's first and foremost, tell me a bit more about you, Danielle.
Hey, Emma, thanks for having me. I'm Danielle Colley. I'm an integrative life coach and founder of Your Good Life. I help successful women in business who are feeling dissatisfied with their lives to reach their full potential by helping them to transition from who and where they are now to who and where they desire to be. And transition is what we were talking about a bit off air just now. So I know that that's something that you're really passionate about as well.
I am in my other life, in my one life, I'm a personal branding specialist, so it's very much what I'm about. And the thing I love about travel is, and you might have found the same, is I feel like I am my truest self when I'm traveling. The connections I've made when I've traveled have felt so real, to the point where the people, you know, I met them 16 years ago, really dancing on a table somewhere, we're still mates, you know. And to the, you know, you go, I don't really remember how I know you. Like someone goes, how do you know them? You're like, I don't really know, but they're awesome and they're my friend and they're the person who just pops up in your life from time to time, and I've loved that. So that's why I enjoy traveling, because I feel me.
I think that there is something about being away from all responsibilities. So while when you're traveling, you know, you don't have the everyday pressure that you have in your normal life. So it's something about you get to bring out the truest essence of you without all of the extra like blah blah in the background, you know, all the things that we are always thinking about. You can just also, when you're meeting people all the time, they don't have the context of who you are, so you can actually be whoever you want when you're traveling. You know, you can be much more gregarious than you normally are because you have that sort of sense of freedom.
Yeah, I think it's like especially when you're younger. I did my first big travel when I was 18, and it was like such an important thing because like coming out of high school and all your connections and a lot of your, you know, you're tied back to your family or your high school or your part-time job. So you fit into those boxes, and then to go away and travel and to just be whatever and all of those life experiences to come together at such a young age was awesome for me. And I think that's why it's not the only reason I love. I love seeing new stuff and eating yummy food. And
eating yummy food, absolutely. Look, I started traveling. I mean, I've traveled always with my parents. So, but I did my first big trip on my own at 18 also. But I think the best gift my dad ever gave me was a one-way ticket when I was 21. And then he gave me a few internal flights. Like he said, here's your one-way ticket. You've got a few internal flights that you can cash in, and then when you're ready to come home, I'll bring you home again. And that, seriously, I think every parent should give that to their kid, because I learnt more in that 2 years than I learnt in my entire, you know, high schooling career, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. I was when I was in year 12, my dad offered to take me to India. Dads are great for these things. Dad offered, was going to a conference and said, oh, do you want to come with me? And we'd actually gone through a pretty crappy time in our family recently, so it was a good time. And my English year 12 English teacher said to me, do you really think it's a good time in your final year of high school to be going to India? And I was like, let me just think about that. Yeah, I do. And, like, subsequently I've gone on to visit India 10 times and even partner with a business. And, like, it's not all about that, but, like, it did. It, like, ended up opening this door for me and opening this world for me and meeting all these people. And that's the biggest – I love the connections that
travel brings. I think it's a significant point, actually, because a lot of kids, you know, in high school place so much emphasis, they place so much pressure on that final year of school. And it really kind of – it shows, I think, for me, that there is so much more out there in so many ways, you know. Traveling is a really fantastic education, and, I take my kids as often as I can to all sorts of places because, for me, personally, my geography was crap until I started traveling.
Yeah.
And now the places that I've been to, my geography is excellent. And if I haven't been there, then my geography is still crap. So I need to go everywhere in order to be very good. that's my theory.
That's my logic. Yeah, I just needed to study more. But the same. I went to the only thing I knew about Persian history was Xerxes and the Greeks. That the Persians fought Sparta, basically that sort of era. That's it for Persia. Well, I went to Bahrain. I went to the National Museum. I mean, Persian history, like there's so many things we get from that area, from that region. And unfortunately, because of the wars in that area, we have a pretty sort of not great view of it. But like so much stuff that we have. And pearls come from Bahrain. And like the industry was massive and the trade was massive from that region. I would not have learnt that nor been as interested had I, and that's an afternoon, you know, but it opened up a new world to me. And not everybody has the opportunity, but like that's why museums are amazing.
Absolutely. And it's a completely different form of learning, reading it in a book, right? And that's the thing, it's sort of much more immersive, more memorable, unless you're talking about the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam and you go after you've been smoking joints, because I have to say that. Probably more forgettable for me because completely my own doing.
I went to the Rijksmuseum. I remember. Okay, I didn't go under those conditions. I don't remember that bit. It's different. I remember a beautiful skirt in the gift shop. Maybe there's something different about me. But I specifically know that you're full of amazing stories and you're such an engaging, entertaining person. But you have a very particular story that tickled my fancy. Because we have a common achievement, which is that we've both climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yes, but the thing that stands us apart, which I find very interesting, is when I asked you if you would do it again, you said in a heartbeat, and I was like, no way, one and done.
Yeah, I went in 2011 and it was my first challenge of that type. So, yeah, it could have could have been like, stop me from doing anything like that ever again. But instead, it just gave me a taste for it, and I've subsequently gone on to do many charity challenges. So a charity challenge is where you take on challenge and raise money for charity. And Kilimanjaro is probably one of the more well-known ones in that category. But, I've actually been almost offered to tour lead it again. Mm. And I've said if the opportunity comes up, I would tour lead it in a second because I loved it.
Amazing. Have the other ones that you've done for charity been as challenging, or has that been the most challenging?
Yeah, Kokoda. I did Kokoda last year and that was brutal. And they're just so different. Kilimanjaro is, as you know, there's six ecosystems. So you go from like walking in your shorts to wrapped up in snow gear, whereas Kokoda is different in that you're dealing with rain, humidity, mud, sweat, like it's dirty, it's hot.
I would complain a lot.
And it's different in that, like with the mountains, the nice things about the mountains are even like I did Everest Base Camp as well, you've got a goal, you're going to a spot, and although Kokoda Trail has a start and a finish, every single day is uppity downy. The next day is uppity down. Oh, like a bit more up and then a bit more down. A little bit up, a little bit down, they say, which is BS because it's up, super down. And so that's challenging because with at least with Kilimanjaro, you're going towards and you can literally see it.
Do you have the incredible views on Kokoda? Because that's the, I mean, Kilimanjaro had some stunning views. And to be honest, I loved the walking. The daily miles were fine for me. I was the fittest I'd ever been and was super prepared. I had trained in an oxygen tank. Like I was really, I was super like, I got a gold star for that. So that part was fine. I hate camping. I hate the cold. I was okay with the whole thing. For me, it was the summit, you know, that summit night of getting up at 11 o'clock at night and walking through the night to the sunrise was one of the most challenging things that I've ever done up there with giving birth. Like it was, and it had a similar range of emotions that I can't do this anymore. I'm tortured. Like, can I just stop now? I've got this, I can do this, you know? But yeah, it certainly had the whole gamut of emotions for me.
Yeah, I know. Look, summit night was the hardest thing I'll ever do in my life. Yes. 100%, right. Hands down. And I've done a bunch of other challenges. Kokoda was challenging in a different way. Unfortunately, I didn't have a very good leader. We'll have a Kokoda episode. I'll go into that in more detail. Talked the talk but didn't walk the walk. So,
really, but you had to piggyback them.
Thank God I didn't. I just like CrossFit police officer.
Oh, you did enough.
Yep. As I've said to a lot of people, I'm like, just giving you a picture. Yeah. Great. We've got it. Great. So, and a friend said that, and there were days where we had really amazing views, but not to the degree that you have on Kilimanjaro. Kilimanjaro was like, and you had the goal just visual all the time, pretty much all the time. With Kokoda, like being in the jungle, like it literally does sort of, it's that mind thing of you're in the dark. All you can see is the ground. I can't tell you if you showed me photos from five of the days where we were.
Yeah.
Because it looks the same and it's beautiful and it's lush and green, but if that's all you can see, it's a real
mind. I was about to say, it sounds like it's much more of a mind challenge of, you know, keeping your positivity, keeping your, you know, your focus in the right place.
And getting to those lunch spots or a view and being at that, the challenge with my leader was that we didn't really have that time and even to stop in the rainforest and to stop in that jungle that felt like it was that and go, I'm in the jungle, like, wow. We weren't having those times to stop and appreciate and breathe, which I loved on Kilimanjaro. The guides are so amazing in pacing you and supporting you and making you go slow from day one. Like it teaches you a lot about.
We had some interesting people in our group. We had a couple of people with some stuff to prove. Dashed off ahead. We lost a couple of people to we didn't lose them, they didn't die, but we lost a couple of people to altitude sickness. Mm-hmm. And I succumbed to altitude sickness on the summit. But powered through. Because they said I would die if I didn't.
Gotta love that message.
Yeah, I'm like motivated.
Motivation.
Yeah. I'm motivated by that.
The walking, I was surprised too. I thought I was going to struggle every day and I thought it was the walking and the fatigue of the walking that was going to be my biggest challenge. And the way the company I'd gone with had sort of struck the fear of God into me about, like, if you don't break in your boots and if you don't have this and if you don't have that, the only biggest downfall I had was not a warm enough sleeping bag. But I was surprised by how much I enjoyed every day, the walking and the views. I was like, it was such a polarizing thing of some people love it and want to do it again. And so you did enjoy the experience, but
I absolutely enjoyed the experience. For me, I mean, I had been, a single mum for a few years, and I had turned 40 that year. So I wanted a challenge. You know, I was sort of questioning some stuff about my life, my purpose, all that sort of thing. So I really wanted to have like some kind of experience, some kind of challenge, not just to mark my 40th birthday, but I really wanted to go and like see if I could have an epiphany on top of a mountain, something along those lines. And the experience itself, I mean, it changed me, you know, it absolutely changed me. I made a couple of really good friends, one of whom I still speak to regularly. I caught up with her a couple of weekends ago and did some yoga. So, you know, the experience was super profound. And to be able to say I did that, you know, I climbed the highest freestanding mountain on the planet. I reached summit. Not everybody does. I have photos of me smiling, which is remarkable.
Yes.
I created a video, which I'm really proud of. And I raised money for a charity, which I'm really passionate about. So, you know, all of those things, that tick, 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 that is a life achievement. So for sure, I can see all the merit of it. It just doesn't matter. Would I do it again? Like if I could go back, yes, I would do it again. Would I do it again moving forward? No. Like my mountaineering boots, I'm hanging up my mountaineering boots.
Well, my friend who did Kelly with me, and she'll probably, I hope she listens to this, Miss Fee, has said that a few times, and I've ended up got her to Bhutan.
Yeah, right.
But she's hung them up again. And what she does is she doesn't just literally hang them up. At the end of the trip, she gives all of her stuff away to the locals, which is lovely and generous and amazing.
That's how determined she is. And then she forgets. Again, it's like childbirth. You forget, you know.
Yeah. Then she goes and buys it all again. And I'm like, do you really want to get up? No, never again.
Okay, cool. Look, I would do Nepal in a heartbeat. When I went to Nepal last, I didn't get to do any trekking, you know. I just I did a bit of like quick in and out. I did Kathmandu. I did some sort of stuff around to the base of the Himalayas and stuff. I didn't get to do any of the amazing trekking that there is there, where you get to sleep in a bed at night if you're lucky, you know. And that I think would be a really profound experience. I would like to do that with my kids when they're a bit older. I think that's a really cool family adventure. Or maybe actually, mm-hmm. I had one image that was us, like, you know, like the Von Trapps, and then another that was totally like them bitching at me the whole time about no Wi-Fi. So I might have to reconsider that family trip.
Well, it's funny. I actually took my dad because I did Everest Base Camp, and then I took my dad, and he's never done trekking before, had never done trekking before in 2017. So he was 62, never done trekking, and we flew into Lukla, and then we did 5 days from there up to Namte Bazaar, so part of the Everest route. And, yeah, it was really, really wonderful to take someone and share that. But like he ended up spending $600 or $700 on his Telstra plan trying to check things whilst up there. So I accepted, someone who's always on social media and online, accepted there was no Wi-Fi. He did not. So there's a lesson. But also you can't explain, and you've done it, the fatigue of altitude and the fatigue.
What's the elevation? What's the elevation of Everest base camp?
Oh, base camp, you get up to 5,300 metres, yeah, but where we were, the highest we went was just over 3,000. But on the first day, we went from 2,400, we actually go down a little bit, up and down a little bit, to stay at a place called Pukding. And we did about 4.5 hours, and he just got in, sort of like stumbled in, you know, face drained of colour. It's like, hey, Dad, you got to eat. And I like, had to like take his bag off for him. And like, he reached for the teacup and spilled it. And it's just,
it's like being drunk.
You can't believe,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to eat. And I'm like, I took the parent role. And like, you have to eat. Mm. We just have to have a little bit and we can do this. And it was just really, but it was a wonderful thing to take someone on. And like, it's to see into what you've done. I think that's a really nice thing to have a taste. And you don't have to do the whole thing. Like, there was no way Dad's going to Everest Base Camp. So you can do portions of the treks, and I think that's really lovely.
I think that any time, like, it's really easy to, And I'm not judging any type kind of travel. Anyone who gets out of their normal, you know, everyday life and travels anywhere, kudos to you, right? Because there's a whole big world out there. Some people like to go to resorts. Some people, you know, and I like to go to resorts, not judging anyone there. Like, you know, hit me up. I love a resort. I love a breakfast buffet, man. But I think that when you get off the beaten track and you do something that is a little out of the ordinary or a little bit challenging, I think that the reward for that kind of travel is a very different kind of reward to lying on a beach and drinking a pina colada. They both have merits, but it's about having like a few different kinds of experiences to draw upon, because I know that the times where I've done more challenging things are the ones where I've not only had the education of the different countries or the education of the different cuisines or the languages or the people, but I've also had the education of myself in those circumstances. And that, for me, that is the essence of traveling, is, you know, learning more about who you are.
Yeah. And I call it travel with a purpose. And it's so... you so need holidays and you so need relaxation. But like, yeah, as you said, that just the fulfillment, the sense of doing something that's bigger than you, so much bigger than you, like getting that. And then, yeah, the time to think and be with your mind when you're trekking for 7 days. How long was yours?
Mine was 7 days, yeah.
Yeah, so 7 days with your brain. Yeah. Like, because you talk to people, but like there's still a lot of time in the day where you get
I didn't shut up. It was actually a thing. People were like, would you just shut up?
You're like, no.
I was like, no, I'm tired and I'm really, really challenged right now. And the way I'm just going to get through this is just like talking shit the whole time.
And they're like, please talk to the guide at the front. Talk to the, and I that's what I do. I'm like, yeah, if you guys can't cope with talking right now, talk to the.
Well, it's funny because the girl that who I said that I met up with last week or whatever, turns out that we were in very similar social circles 20 years ago. You know, we knew a lot of the same people. We had dated like some guys in the same group, you know, so we had so many similarities that it was really entertaining conversation as well, and you know, deeper stuff, as because we were there as you mentioned, we were there for Rafiki Mwema, we were there raising money for them, and a large percentage of us went after you know, finishing the mountain. We actually went and we stayed there. They don't take people to stay there any longer. That was before they changed that. And you know, I got to go and hug my sponsor child, you know, which was a really, really profound way to end such an epic trip. You know, I was bone weary. I was, you know, I had that sense of achievement and the sense of like, oh my God, I can't believe I did it. You know, a bit of blistered lip action going on from the frost.
Windburn.
Yeah, fully. And then got to go and say, hey, you know, we just, yeah, because they were following the whole way along, because one of their managers, Eric, he came with us. So they were following the whole way along, and he unfortunately got altitude sickness and couldn't make it. Our African lion, we were sure that he would be the first one up there, but there's just no telling, is there, with altitude sickness? It's just who gets it on the day.
Yeah. But so yeah, can you tell me, and it's funny, I've actually got Rafiki Mwema affirmation cards too. On my
desk. Affirmation cards, they're beautiful.
So beautiful. Rafiki Mwema, I will put all this in the show notes, but they have a beautiful shop. It's a great way to support them. Can you just tell us a bit about what they do?
Sure. So Rafiki Mwema, when I first got to know them, they were a safe house for girls who'd been victims of violent sexual crimes in Kenya. And over the time, you know, when I first met them, they just had a little house in town, and I actually wrote an article about them for Women's Weekly. And the second I got off the phone from Sarah, I had to go to the park across the road and cry. I was so touched and moved by hearing about her passion and the way that they were changing these little girls' lives, because the stigma attached with being a victim of violent sexual crime in Africa is horrific, and what was happening to these small girls was you know, it just completely inhumane, unfathomable for us. Mm-hmm. And their future is pretty daunting after that's happened to them. And, you know, they were looking at girls as young as one who had been, you know, sold by their mums for sex. So now they, you know, now they have a farm. They were very generously given a farm by a beautiful couple called the Doyles, and they have created this compound. So now they have boys and girls in separate houses. They have little girls and big girls. They keep them all sort of in their own groups, but they are indeed one big family, because a lot of them haven't had that family experience, whether it's due to abuse or poverty or, you know, drugs, whatever. So they are schooling, raising, loving, feeding, I think it's like 75, 80 kids right now, if not more. Mm. So, you know, if anyone has, you know, some spare cash that they want to sponsor a child, I know that it's like 100% donation goes to the goes to the organization, goes to the children for their care and all of the running of the facility of the office works and stuff here is taken care of by the shop, I think.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you know, you can support Rafiki from as little as you know, $5 a month, which is with their outreach program. So every child, I mean, the first prize is to be able to get them back into their community. But in order to do that, as I said, the stigma of what's happened to them is often pretty it's very, very challenging for them to go back into their community and remain safe. So, so if they do find a family member or someone that a child can go and live with, they're constantly checking on them to ensure that they remain safe. And if not, then they straight back to the compound.
Oh, it's beautiful. And, I know that they also run, you know, for the Australian audience, they run trauma workshops. That's right. And like education. Mm-hmm. Because like trauma happens in many different ways. And so taking there's one of the boys, I believe, yeah, he come over.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter, and he shares some information on that. I was actually signed up to go to one because they're down at Lennox, which is not far from where I live in the Gold Coast. And I signed up to go to one and I didn't end up getting to go, which is such a shame. But I'm super interested because it's just something to understand how to communicate people who've been through trauma, or to understand what they might be going through. It doesn't mean you have to be a counsellor, a psychologist or whatever. It's just to be like, okay, there's trauma here.
Well, often people are scared to talk about it because they're scared they're going to say the wrong thing. Yeah. So they just pretend that nothing's going down. So, but having a greater understanding of what happens to the brain in trauma, I think, is a very valuable education for anyone. Anne-Marie Tipper has formulated or grown over time is her play therapy, which really is a super powerful tool in helping to help the children to understand what's happened to them, to communicate what's happened to them, and to, you know, put them on the path to healing. So
It's so beautiful that you got to go there. And look, I know a lot of people would be interested to go, but like, it's such a great, I understand the stance that that Sarah has taken.
Absolutely.
And that the organisation has taken. Yeah. Because coming in and out of, having people come in and out of your life after you've been through trauma and people, you know, leave again, that's some of the big challenges. And, you know, we can be observers and we can understand work without having to always physically go there. And you can still, Rafiki and Wema are still running challenges. So there's a way that you can be physically involved by doing a challenge like Danielle did and raising money and being very active like that, you know, without having to, you know, it's such a respect for the children to not go and then re-traumatise or add any other further elements to their process. So Sarah did a sort of Q&A on it. Last year I was looking at it and I just said, oh, respect to you, because it's
it was a big decision, you know, and the more sort of articles and education came out around the voluntourism, as it's known, the more articles and information that came out about it, and the more they realized the impact that it was actually having. Yeah, you know, it became an easier choice for them, I think, because even though volunteerism brings in some money, at what cost?
Yeah, and there's different ways, like some of the organisations I've been with, Oxfam and World Vision and Plan, to their projects, but we go as observers and we do go. I've also been to a place where I just offered to go in Nepal. I just offered to go to the school and to read to the children, and I went to one place and they said, we would welcome you to come and see the school. We welcome to go around the school, but we won't take you into classes because we don't want to interrupt the children. And I was like, fair enough. Like, you know, I still got to go. I still got to understand the work that they were doing, but without interrupting the programming or, you know, it's just, I totally respect that. And there's a place and a time for volunteering and for using your skills. And actually on Kilimanjaro, I got the biggest lesson of my life from a friend who ran a fundraising agency. And I was saying, I just want to, like, next time I go to India, I just, like, want to do more. I just want to, like, get my hands dirty. And I just want to, like, you know, like, help some babies or build a house and, like, sort of do this stuff with my hands. And he's like, so are you a builder? And I'm like, no. And he's like, so are you do you have, like, nursing qualifications? Like, no. He's like, so, like, how are you, like, going to help with your hands? And sort of explain that thing to me of, like, just being another pair of hands isn't necessarily always the best thing. And that he explained to me that my voice and my skills in marketing and promotion, which I've done it had over the years, my comms experience, that's my power. Educating and helping people on how to fundraise, or educating people on how to get their message out there, that's my strength and that's what I can use. It was really cool because, like, the next year I ended up volunteering my services to run a newsletter and do social media for a charity in Australia working with India, and then I went to India and observed the programs and then shared it back.
Amazing.
And it was like he just put that message in. It was like, use your skills, understand your skills, and, like, your skills of writing and communication, sharing stories.
Such a valuable lesson, because, I mean, we do want to help, you know, and I'm seeing it now, you know, I'm watching the race riots, you know, super, super riled up right now about what's going on in the world, what's going on everywhere. And the fact is, I don't know enough about it, you know. So you know, I think understanding how we can help, understanding how we can't help, and with everything, and I think this is, you know, valid in all of those situations, educating yourself. Learn as much as you can, learn more, talk to people more, sharing the information that you have, and having appropriate action, taking appropriate action.
And asking how you can help. And sometimes, like Rafiki Muhammad, they need money.
Yeah,
they need money to share for these children. Yeah. Like, they need voices to raise awareness about what they're doing. And I love their message of, I will not stay silent. Yeah. And it's even more powerful right now. I will not stay silent about their work. I will not stay silent about what's been happening. Getting that message out there is super important. But they simply need money.
Absolutely.
And look, if you can't sponsor, you know, the shop has been a great way too. I think you can't sponsor, or that's not the way you want to contribute, I choose to purchase gifts and for myself as well. I've got a beautiful dress through their shop. You know, if you choose to do it that way, that's another great way. But any organisation that you support or you want to help with, it's not necessarily like the bushfires we just had in Australia. All of Australia running to the bushfire zone was not a good call.
Yeah.
What they needed was funds, or that we needed to ask the question, how can we help you? So, you know, it's not, you don't have to feel bad about asking how to help.
Yeah.
So that those organizations get the best possible support. But I love it. So no trekking adventures planned?
Not in the immediate future. I'm sticking to weekend bushwalks with my family. And you know, I hope that we'll be able to travel again soon, you know, whether we're going to be doing some more stuff in Australia, or, you know, if the international borders open up, be able to get out and about soon and have more adventures, whether on foot or not.
You did have a pretty cool adventure last year.
I did. Yes, I eloped to New York. Yes. We got hitched in Central Park, which was super exciting. Didn't tell any of our friends and family, just ran off with the children and put on some fancy clothes and went and did the thing. It was so exciting. It was excellent. And then hit up Hawaii in a resort, funnily enough, for a lovely honeymoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's a honeymoon, you're going to do that. But you were running around New York and did a lot of, you know, kids got very hands-on education.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some epic sightseeing in New York, and it was my first time. Even though I've done so much traveling everywhere, it was my first time to New York. So, and I was like, I was plotting, how can we live here? What can we do?
Oh, it's a world in itself.
I'm happy that didn't pan out now. It's, yeah, everyone's had a tough few months.
I know, and I totally wanted to. Actually, it's really weird. I've been to New York 3 times, always at the end of May. So I had a memory come up on Facebook. It was 11 years ago today. I was on a tour bus in New York with my brother. 6 years ago, I was in a park, Central Park, doing a walk. And then it was like 2 years ago, Matt and I were in Times Square. And then, like, so that was a bit of, like, it was awesome. Be like, oh, my gosh, that's all those times. And then to see photos of it right now is just, like, hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a strange and funny time that we're living in. So it's wonderful to be able to travel through our memories. And thank you for going back through that trauma with me, rehashing. But I watched, I will share the link to both our videos actually in the show notes. Watching your video, and one of the things I loved the most we both included in our videos was the singing. And the singing of the African guides as you're going up, and it just takes me, just the tears come.
I know, it's goosebumps. I've got goosebumps just talking about it. Yeah, it's super powerful, amazing.
They're amazing motivators. And if anybody's thinking about doing it, obviously once travels are safe and things like that, I just can assure you that those guides are phenomenal.
Absolutely. And the whole experience, you know, if you have the opportunity to do it, it's one hell of an adventure. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, you won't forget it. Thank you so much for your time. You've been incredible.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And, yeah, we will keep traveling through our memories at the moment.
Cool. Thank you.
Listening, guys, and look, a reminder as well, this podcast is not only about travel and adventure, but we're also raising awareness for mental health. So it's really important to reach out for help if you're struggling at all, but it's also important to reach out to your friends, especially at this difficult time in the world, and ask, are you okay? And if you're not okay and you need support, in Australia you can call Lifeline on 131114. Or I also recommend visiting the blackdoginstitute.org.au for some wonderful resources. If you're outside Australia, search mental health support in your own country and do ask for help. It's the first step, and speaking with a professional can really help.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us with feedback, questions, comments, or gift baskets, at info@lovelytravels.com. Learn more about us and read the blog accompanying all these destinations and interviews at www.lovelytravels.com. And you can join in the conversation on social media, Instagram @lovelytravels, and our Facebook group. It's also called, you guessed it, Lovely Travels.
And, of course, we want you to subscribe to the podcast and rate and review the show. It helps our like-minded people to find us, and it lets us know that you love us, because, you know, we know you do.
And we love you. So tune in next week when we're off to the Netherlands and all the fried food and other goodness.
Can't wait. See you then.